in Oregon. And without a good higher ed system, K-12 is really not that relevant. It's the higher ed jobs. It's the jobs, the skills you get in higher education. So I urge you to think clearly and strategically and forwardly to restore the governor's budget for higher ed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kirkland. Thank you all three for excellent testimony. Appreciate it. Okay. Brian, Dytel, and Kimball, no, excuse me, I'm sorry. Brian Dytel, Mark Perlman, Nick Malone, Nancy Becker, and then on deck, I have Kimball Yates and Mark Nelson. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Dytel. I'm a member of the American Federation of Teachers. I have a master's degree in mathematics, and I've been at Oregon State University earning my PhD for the past 4 years. Like many other graduate employees, I work as a teaching assistant, and it's strange I receive a tuition waiver and stipend. Over the past several years, my take-home pay has been decreasing every single year. Right now, I would just be happy if my pay stayed at the same level. What's happening is at Oregon State University, they're creating new mandatory fees every year for departments and classes and programs that used to be covered through tuition. Graduate employees like teaching assistants will receive a tuition waiver, but not a fee waiver. And so what's happening is we're paying more and more in fees, and we're making the same amount of money every year. When raises do occur, they're often meaningless because they're wiped out by the next year's fee increase. Currently at Oregon State University, there are fees for some graduate employees that are in excess of $1,000 per term. That's well over a month's pay for many of us. The salaries and benefits of graduate employees at Oregon State University are already among the lowest in the entire nation. I checked online. I couldn't find anywhere that pays their graduate teaching assistants less than Oregon State University. The closest I could find is Boise State University. It offers $500 more per year in addition to a waiver of fees and full health insurance. When raising money by making departments and programs fee-based, it undermines the intent of our tuition waiver. However, for now, we'll just be happy with not having decreases year after year. It will cost roughly $3 to $5 million to take care of fees for graduate employees. Investing in graduate employees is a relatively inexpensive way to improve the education for students at the university level. We teach almost 30% of all classes, and we work on multi-million-dollar research jobs and things like that. Thank you.
How do you pronounce your name?
Dytel.
That's okay. I apologize.
No one gets it right.
Would you have access to a copy of one of those, or can make copies for the? Not, you know, we don't want your social security number and all that stuff. But I think it'd be instructive to see the, you know, per term the fees versus that. And you're saying that fees are just not covered in the tuition waivers.
No,
correct.
No, and the cost is shifting from tuition to fees.
And you're a math. You're going for a doctorate in math,
yes.
So that you probably understand the numbers a little bit.
Not really.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Dytel.
Senator Walker.
We have a bill in my Senate Education Committee that I didn't move out today on resource fees and other fees that universities are increasingly using to fund programs because we're underfunding them here. And I just wanted you to know that rather than move the bill at this time, we are sending a letter to the President and the Board of Higher Education, and they will have to address with our committee, to my satisfaction, by the middle of next month, what they're doing about those. And if they don't, we're stuffing the bill back into another bill and moving it. So I would very much appreciate what the Chair has asked you for, a copy of the fees and the increases that you have seen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Perlman, and I'm a philosophy professor at Western Oregon University. I'm president of the faculty union there, and I'm here to encourage you to fund higher ed better than the co-chair's budget would, and something like what the governor's budget had. We've seen decades of cuts in Oregon's system of higher ed. We've had that result in unmanageable tuition, and we're pricing many of our students out of higher ed just because of the tuition increases we've had. We also are having problems recruiting faculty, and I'll share one story with you. I think Senator Walker heard my story of this before, but in my own department, we were hiring a philosophy professor, and we had a candidate who was a specialist in Eastern philosophy and who was himself a Buddhist, and we offered him the position, and he turned it down because of money. So when a Buddhist turns you down because of not enough money, you're in trouble. This is absolutely true. That's Oregon. That's pretty sad. We also have trouble keeping the faculty that we get. We have the phenomenon, they'll come for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then they'll look around and find that almost anywhere else they could go, they could get more salary and less teaching, and we lose some of the best and brightest. So we've got a lot of parts of funding higher ed. The Faculty and College Excellence Act would help with the faculty salary issue and equity and compensation for adjuncts. We also have this $8 million fund that's supposed to go to faculty compensation, which we desperately need. We would like to make sure that that's spread around equally, equitably within the system so that it doesn't end up being just a star fund for one or two universities. And I think what we would mainly like to ask from you, we have confidence in you that you understand this problem. We need to solve the problem. We would ask you to fix us first. And we need to turn the situation around, and instead of funding it less, we need to fund it more. We need to, the governor's budget won't do everything we need, but it's certainly what we need to start with, and we can't go back from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Perlman. Tell us when the existentialists turn you down, and then we all better leave the state. So,
okay, I'll let you know.
All right.
Esteemed legislators, thank you very much for your time and this opportunity. My name is Nicholas Malone. I'm a member of the American Federation of Teachers and a graduate teaching fellow at the University of Oregon in the Department of Anthropology. As I'm sure you are aware, educational attainment is directly related to political participation and to personal health, perhaps even wealth. As such, education serves as a foundation for a democratic society. As a graduate teaching fellow, myself and 1,300 others occupy a unique position in the university structure. It often casts us as liaisons between faculty and administration on one hand, and between the student body on the other. This position has made us privy to the great expanse of difficulties and disadvantages that confront university students and faculty alike within the context of diminished resources. I'll echo the sentiment of other speakers we've had. In post-secondary education, reduced funding has several deleterious effects. It makes post-secondary education less accessible to working and low-income class families through subsequent increases in tuition and fees and other course-related expenditures. Second, it cripples the ability of the university system and community colleges to retain high-quality educators, as other states offer salaries and benefits that cannot be matched. Finally, in my opinion, it increases the reliance on private funding, which subsequently guides faculty research agendas and appropriates science and scientific findings for those with the ability to fund it. I feel this does a disservice to public education. Here's a quick example I overheard in the hallway just the other day. This comment was made by a junior faculty member at the University of Oregon, discussing the demands of grant writing and building a tenure case in a climate heavily biased towards those who generate external funds. The comment was, "My problem is I have to spend some of my time teaching." We need to publicly support higher education and allow our educators to serve the people of the state of Oregon by teaching the people of the state of Oregon. Real support can come from closing some tax loopholes, and we can support the emerging Fix Us First campaign. Thank you for including this statement in the official record and in your decision-making process.
Thank you all three for excellent testimony. And I think Ms. Becker?
Yes? You can stay here. members of the committee, Chair Galizia, my name is Nancy Becker, and I am a registered dietitian. I teach nutrition in the Department of Chemistry at PSU. I've been teaching since the fall of 1998. I teach 100 students each quarter, mostly pre-nursing, pre-med, and pre-dental students. I'm an adjunct faculty member. That means I teach less than 23 credits out of a full-time load of a possible 45 credits. I have no health insurance, no retirement benefits, no job security, and no chance to teach more classes or to move into another classification of fixed-time faculty, which teach 18 credits out of a possible 36, because there's no mechanism for me to move on or move up. Fixed-term faculty do receive health benefits and are in the PERS system. I'm extremely lucky to have a department that compensates me financially very well, and I have a three-term contract. I promised the chemistry department I'd say how terrific they are in front of you. Not every adjunct faculty has this security, though, as many adjunct faculty members have contracts for one term at a time and are paid at about minimum wage. More than half the classes taught at PSU are taught by this pool of casual labor. We are PhDs and have master's degrees in history, English, biology, math, engineering, and more. 30 seconds. Some of us have day jobs in our professions, but most of us are making a career out of teaching at the university level. Academic life and teaching is our life's work, yet we're treated as casual labor, with no evaluations, no job security, and no chance for promotion. PSU leans heavily on us. Adjunct faculty teach over 50% of classes. The university depends on us to show up, know our stuff, and fulfill our obligations to students, yet we're not considered a true part of the university community. An example of this is I had a student who wanted to do an independent study, and I was more than willing to accommodate her. However, I could not be the professor of record since there was no mechanism to have it be an official class. I had to have another professor sign off on this class, yet I did the work. So I love PSU, and I love teaching. But we really have a problem with PSU, and this is not a result of adjuncts being bad teachers. It's a structural and systemic problem at PSU, and our students deserve better.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay, Kemble Yates and Mark Nelson, and then on deck, Steve Shumate, Dave Porter, and Bruce Taylor. And again, remember, just we're trying to keep it to 2 minutes to give the maximum amount of time for, so every maximum participation. So you're taking time out of other people's testimony if you go over.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Association of Oregon Faculty. Here with me today, and he'll speak first, and then I'll finish up, is Professor Kimball Yates, a board member from Southern Oregon University, a professor of mathematics.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators, and Representatives. My name is Kemble Yates, and I have been a professor of mathematics at Southern Oregon University for 20 years. One of the joys of my job is to engage in Oregon's future. My students' optimism about the future is infectious. There are so many wonderful stories of young people who are discovering the world around them, discovering their place in it, and transforming their lives through a college education. And increasingly, those stories include adults of all ages coming back to college to get a new start, a new direction, with renewed hope. I'm here today to tell you that we desperately need your help. The governor's recommended budget would help us get back on our feet, but the recent Ways and Means co-chair's budget would be a catastrophe, and for my university in particular. It slashes monies for the regional universities from $9 million to $2 million. Faculty salary dollars are completely cut out. And enrollment growth goes $14 million to nothing. And the massive reduction in our capital budgets is horribly short-sighted for our future. My university went through a massive budget bloodletting this year. We lost 25 faculty positions and even more support people. And when we actually try to hire new faculty, our embarrassing compensation levels make attracting and retaining good people extremely hard. In my department, we ran a failed search 2 years ago. Position in math education. Couldn't hire anybody that we felt was qualified. We ran it again last year and finally did end up getting our fifth-ranked candidate. All of the universities are once again making painful budget cuts just in the time that we need to be reinvesting. Or Oregon's college students are really hurting. I have seen so many raccoon-eyed students in the last few years. They work 30 and more hours a week. They borrow tens of thousands of dollars. They juggle full class schedules, families, and jobs. And as bad as those stories are, I worry about the stories I'll never hear. The people who would have been my students but can never afford to start. Our state's future depends on giving access to people for public higher education. I urge you to pass an appropriation for the Oregon University system like the governor's recommended budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yates and Mr. Nelson. And the trying to hire folks is an important part. We've heard that several times. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if I can make just a few comments myself, and we pass out some material. Since 1990 and the passage of ballot measure 5, which I have to claim some responsibility for because we ran the campaign in opposition and lost after winning four times during the 80s. But since that time, there's been a constant investment in higher education as it relates to OUS's share of the state's general fund. Every legislative session, I think, except for 1999, we've provided for you, and I think you've seen before, the rankings of the various institutions with their peer comparators. And you can see in every single ranking, whether we're talking about the regionals, University of Oregon, Portland State, Oregon State, that we are down at the bottom of those comparators consistently, and that's been the case for over the last 10 years, Mr. Chairman. In addition, I provide you a one-page chart which has been put together for us, which shows what's happened over the last 10 years in terms of faculty salaries. The percent of change in faculty salaries over the last 10 years has been 24.9%. That averages 2.5% per year in terms of the increases for faculty. And adjusted for inflation, we actually have lost 2.5% over the last 10 years. The faculty are the only employees in the state are not on step increases, with the exception of two of the collective bargaining units in the state. So we're not, as you know how the step system works, it doesn't happen in terms of faculty, and we become even farther behind. Finally, in conclusion, it's not just about faculty salaries. It's about funding the Oregon University system at a level in which we can begin to regain the disinvestment that has occurred over the last 16 years. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson and Mr. Yates. Appreciate it very much. Steve Shoemate, Dave Porter, Bruce Taylor.
Mr. Chair, I'm Steve Shoemate. I have a group of three people that I'm here with to testify on the same topic, so if we can all come up together, that would be...
Okay, well, can you start, and then...
I can defer to the chairman, and we can...
Okay, so, well... Yeah, we'll do that next. Okay.
Chairman Galizio, members of the committee, my name's Dave Porter. I'm here to plead with you that you add provisions to this bill so that the Oregon University system will increase the percentage of undergraduates studying Mandarin to 4% and will send 500 students per year to China to study. I won't go through my whole testimony. The case is really very simple. There is a big swing in the hinge of history that's happening. It's the rise of the East, China in particular, India behind it. We are not equipped, K through 12 or at the university level, to meet this challenge and to take advantage of the opportunities. You have an opportunity here with higher ed and the budget before you to give them some incentives to move ahead from where they are now. And I would plead that you read my testimony and you work with them to make some changes over the next biennium. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Porter.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Taylor with Defenders of Wildlife. You won't normally find us coming before the Education Committee. I'm here today, though, to support the base budget for the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University, a very small piece of the Oregon University system budget. Some of you are members of other subcommittees may have already heard a little bit more about the Institute this year. That's one of the great things about the Institute. It's a program that cuts across a lot of natural resource issues, something that we really value. Most people in the natural resources business do, but it makes it more difficult, I I think, for legislators to get a full picture of the program, just because the budget's a little bit fragmented. In any event, the base budget, which is included in the higher ed budget, is $500,000 for the biennium. The co-chair's budget only has half that in there. To keep the base budget intact, you need the option package number 351, $250,000. The Institute has a lot of great things going for it. For us in particular, the information program is particularly critical. Defenders of Wildlife has really struggled with natural resource information management issues, trying to get a handle on that for many years. I will spare you the horror stories, but it has been a real morass. It's very hard. We have a history of agencies creating a lot of great data for their own purposes, not very good at making them available to other people, often inconsistent forms, formats, very difficult to use. The Institute was created back in 2001 legislation precisely to deal with that problem. And particularly the information program in the Institute is literally the only entity in the state of Oregon whose job it is to try to make sense of all that information, bring it together in one place, and make it available to people in a form that can be used. Without the option package, what we're left with is backsliding into each agency doing things its own way, controlling its own information. And we know what the result will be because we've seen it as greater costs for state government, less efficiency, and more frustration for all the rest of us who are trying to make use of that information. So we certainly hope that you will support the governor's budget, including the option package number 351. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. And Senator Devlin is telling me that He thought you were in the wrong committee at first, but now I'm in. So, thank you very much. Thank
it's
you
not both. My normal habit.
No. Touche. Thank you very much. So you are
I'm Mr. Shoemate.
Mr. Shoemate, and please bring up the other folks, and would they be listed on the on
yes,
my list?
They're on there as well. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. My name is Steve Shoemate, and I'm a home care worker. I'm a leader in the Home Care Workers Union for the past 5 years. I now serve on the statewide. I now serve as a statewide council director, and I'm a union steward. The district I represent encompasses Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties. And SEIU Local 503 represents about 10,000 home care workers in Oregon. So my testimony today is about the importance of the University of Oregon's Labor Education Resource Center, or LERC, to me personally and professionally. I'm a recent graduate of the LERC ULEAD Certificate Program, and the purposes of the ULEAD Certificate is to provide union leaders with the tools needed to activate, organize, and engage members with an understanding of economic, political, and legal environment in which we work. ULEAD offers classes and clusters which ensure that each graduate receives a well-rounded education in key areas of union leadership. These clusters include contract negotiations, administration, building the union organization, individual leadership skills, and frameworks for labor management relations. So one of the greatest benefits for me when taking these courses was the classroom training and being able to adapt those lessons to real-life experiences. It's helped me in, as a steward, lessons in basic grievance handling have helped me in processing grievances, from interviewing and investigating, following timelines, through resolution of problems. I also gained a great deal from my classmates in hearing about their experiences in their work sites. I've learned a great deal about labor history and how it relates to current issues, and it's inspired me to take part in several opportunities to serve as a member organizer. To organize non-organized workers, this work took me to Illinois to work with child care workers, to Texas, where I organized the public sector in a right-to-work state. I'm very grateful for the opportunity offered me through the ULEAD program and urge the committee to continue to fund this very important program. Unions create a chance for workers to improve their jobs and working conditions and ultimately benefit us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shuman. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is my testimony in support of budget restoration for LERC, Labor Education Research Center. My name is Linda Enos from Oregon Nurses Association. I'm a nursing practice specialist, professional certified ergonomist there. My responsibilities include providing ergonomics, safety, health consultation, and education to our nurse members and to our ONA labor representatives. I will try to paraphrase my testimony. You have the detail that you can read.
Thank you.
I have been a employed at ONA for 3 years, and during that time I've had the privilege of working frequently with safety and health professionals at LURC, so I'd like to talk about their role in keeping workers safe in Oregon. Before describing this partnership, I would like to define the context in which LURC plays an integral role in promoting that worker safety here in the state. Work-related musculoskeletal disorders, or MSDs, such as strains and sprains, account for the greatest proportion of accepted disabling workers' compensation claims in Oregon. The highest number of these claims occur in healthcare services such as hospitals and long-term care. Back injuries attributed to manual lifting and moving in patients are the most common MSDs reported by RNs, registered nurses, and certified nursing aides, and account for a majority of our claims in the Oregon healthcare facilities. In addition, emerging evidence indicates that the impact of this disabling injuries in nurses and other healthcare workers is not only costly for healthcare organizations in terms of workers' compensation, but negatively impacts retention and recruitment of healthcare workers in the state. LURC has played a key role in development and implementation of safety and health programs and research related to prevention of occupational injuries and healthcare workers in the state of Oregon. And I've provided a list of those services which have been integral. Our work with a coalition for healthcare ergonomics is recognized statewide and within the U.S. I would like to finish my testimony in conclusion that some of these examples I provided you demonstrate the vital role of LURC related to worker safety. I want to emphasize that we have few organizations that have the resources and funding available to conduct much needed applied ergonomic safety health research that is necessary to develop practical, effective, safe and healthy interventions for Oregon workplaces. Therefore, it's imperative that LURC be able to continue and grow its research efforts and maintain collaborative partnerships with organizations such as ONA. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Hewitt. I'm the Director of Labor Relations at Kaiser Permanente in Portland. I've had that position for about 20 years, and I've worked at Kaiser in labor relations capacities for 33 years. Approximately 5,000 Kaiser workers are unionized in Oregon, in some of the most important unions in the state and in the United States. We have relied on LURC to build a positive labor relations climate over the many years, and they have done an outstanding job in helping us build an outstanding labor relations climate. Now, I'm a manager. I'm also a Republican and a Republican precinct person. But I think I'm here today to provide a conservative's testimony in favor of LURC. LURC has done a good job in building positive labor relations context, not only at Kaiser, not only in the public sector, but in other companies throughout our state. In closing, I'd like to say that I can appreciate the dilemma that you're in with difficult trade-offs and painful trade-offs with the taxpayers' dollars. But I'd like you to strongly consider the important role of LURC at a time when the labor movement is in serious difficulty and in historic decline. And for the better of our economy and the better of our future, we need a vibrant labor movement. LURC can continue to play an important role there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pruitt. Mr. Pruitt, can I ask, might you have signed up as James?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you all three very much. Appreciate it. So I have Jimmy, looks like Kagan, Merlene Martin, and Wade Foster. And then on deck, Ariel Winiger, John Iverson. Can we just stop there and then we'll go?
Mr. Chair, may I defer my spot to the person after John Iverson, as Ariel Winiger, John, and myself are all from OSU students?
Sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Jimmy Kagan. I'm with the Institute for Natural Resources at OSU, and I will also skip my testimony. I was hoping to come up with Bruce and Taylor. He did an excellent job of describing what we were doing, and I wanted to have an opportunity to pass out that brochure that describes the Institute. But I'm here in favor of the governor's budget and suggesting that you support it. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. Our president, Merlene Martin, was here earlier and hoping to testify before you, but unfortunately she had a meeting that she had to leave to attend, so she asked me to provide her testimony on her behalf. OSEA is here today to strongly support the restoration of funding for the Labor and Education Research Center at the University of Oregon that was lost last legislative session. We also support an increase of 5% above that level for each year of this current coming up biennium in order for LIRC to maintain a level of services that allows it to perform its mission and goals. For the past 30 years, LIRC has proved itself as a valuable resource, in our opinion, for the labor community, the university faculty, students, policymakers such as yourselves, and the public through its teaching, research, and public service. One of the charges that LIRC has is to conduct research in sponsored projects with unions, government, and business partners. OSEA has partnered with LIRC and benefited firsthand from LIRC's ability to conduct excellent research and create a final, well-written, and documented report of their findings. In 2005, we contracted with LIRC to do a research project on the contracting out of work performed by classified school employees in the K-12 school districts. The 2005 research project resulted in the publication titled All Costs Considered, a Report on the Contracting Out of School Support Services in Oregon, which I believe you've all received. The report was researched and written by Gordon Lafer and Robert Bussell at LIRC. The report contained vital information not only for OSEA, but for school boards, parents, and the general public. This was accomplished by LIRC approaching this issue as a public policy decision, which would benefit from an analysis of services already contracted out in some K-12 districts, with a focus on identifying all costs related to contracting out and the economic impact on workers in the community. The report has helped to create a more informed public decision on this important issue. The report was distributed to all school boards and superintendents, as well as legislators and other groups interested in the issue. LIRC is an extremely valuable resource to the labor education and public policy communities, and in order for them to remain in that position as a viable and important research resource to us and the community, we ask you to provide them the funding that they need in order to maintain themselves as a viable entity. And with that, I will end by ending, as I have in the other budgets that I have testified before you on, K-12 Head Start and Community College, to tell you that we believe that education is a continuum. You cannot fund one without the other and still call it a whole education system. So we hope that you will fund the OUS budget at least at the governor's recommended budget level. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Smith didn't recognize you without your Bluetooth. All right, now I'd like to... They must be on the blank. All right, so we had a group of students. Look at that tie. That is incredible.
Wrong university.
I know. Did you know Senator Walker was on this? You're lucky Barnhart's not here.
Well.
Uh-oh.
What have we got here?
You're deaf.
Wow. I'm a double agent, so you don't have to wear it.
Must be an honor student.
I think this belongs to you.
You can share it. Unfortunately, we don't
Thank
have
you.
You can accept it.
What?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair of the committee, thank you for having us today. We would have liked to have brought more students with us. Unfortunately, I talked to 15, 20 students, and they all said, we'd love to go. When is it? And I told them, they said, I have class, I have to study, or I have to work to pay for college. So they won't be attending.
Amen.
Oh, I'm Wade Foster. I'm Oregon State University College of Agricultural Sciences. I'm majoring in Ag Business Management. So we've got students who wanted to be here, but unfortunately they're trying to pay for college right now. I've heard a lot of testimony, and I appreciate all the business supporters and the professors who are here today on our behalf. Where to start? Let's see. My brother right now, he's a graduating senior. He's going to Humboldt State University in Arcata, California. Why? Because it's really not that much more expensive than going to Oregon State University. I'm a sophomore right now, I'll be a junior next term, and I am almost done with my baccalaureate my core classes. Each core class that I've taken has had
100 plus, sometimes 200-400 students in it. You know, and we've got really good professors. I enjoy the professors that we have, but it's getting hard for them because we're packing classrooms full of students, and they can't. There's only so many students you can teach in one sitting. And we're starting to fill classrooms more and more. And honestly, there's not that many big classrooms on the OSU campus. So I would really encourage you to get the money that was in the governor's budget back into higher education. It's imperative. And what are our businesses going to have if we just fund K-12?
Thank you, Mr. Foster.
Thank you. My name is Ariel Winiger. I'm from Prairie City, Oregon. And thank you, Chairman, and members of the committee. I'd like to speak about how higher education has affected my life since I was about the fourth grade. I've been a 4-H member through Extension, housed in Oregon State University, funded under higher education. So you see, there's a trickle-down effect all the way back home in Grant County to all of the students there about what kind of funding gets put into higher education. My experience as a 4-H member were exceptional. My experiences now as an Oregon State student continue to be exceptional. I want that to go on to the future generation of students and my brethren back home at Old Oregon State. I look forward to hearing about you guys continuing to fund higher education and strongly encourage it.
Thank you, Mr. Winiger.
Thank you, Committee Chair. My name is John Anderson. I'm a junior at Oregon State University. I'm here to talk about restoring the budget for higher education. Oregon ranks 46th in the nation in public support of its universities, and with what is happening now, we're only going to fall farther behind. California and Washington, both our neighbors, are above the average, and it's only going to push students away from Oregon to go to universities. And most of the time when you go to a university, you get a job in that state or nearby. And what's that going to do to Oregon? We're going to have fewer and fewer college educated people in Oregon, and that's really going to hurt. What good is K-12 if you stop there? High school diploma doesn't get you much anymore. And if you're not funding higher education, it only makes the economy worse. I'm the oldest of four boys. My dad's a farmer, doesn't have a lot of money, and it's hard to go to college. I mean, we make sacrifices, but we're hoping you guys will make sacrifices for us too. Again, thank you for your time, and I hope you restore the governor's budget.
Thank you, and I'm sure that your fellow students really appreciate your efforts today, so thank you all very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Let's see who's on deck.
I'd like to call up Mayor Norris, Alice Norris here, from Mayor of Oregon City.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am here today not to talk about higher education, but another project, Oregon Solutions, that's in the PSU budget. And I have seen the effectiveness of the Oregon Solutions project process through our participation in the Willamette Falls locks project. These heritage locks that lie on the Willamette River between Oregon City and Westland are navigational locks. They were facing permanent closure, and the Corps of Engineers was on a path to close them down. So we needed a local and state partnership to keep them open. Enter Oregon Solutions. We were able to leverage our $17,000 initial investment to more than $450,000 in other funds to keep the locks open and operating for two more years while we seek a permanent solution for that. Oregon Solutions has been a great forum, a neutral forum, and our convener has been former state superintendent of schools, Vern Duncan. He's been our convener, and he's helped to bring those disparate parties to the table to work on those common solutions. The sheet that you're receiving shows the 24 partners who have been working together with the private sector, nonprofit organizations, state government in this collaborative fashion. Like Willamette Falls locks, many of the challenges facing local and state government cannot be addressed by one government alone, or even by government alone. Oregon Solutions provides an effective structure for public and private sector collaboration. So I urge your support of the governor's recommended budget of $1.5 million so that up to 50 more projects can be funded throughout the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Norrison, for your patience. I appreciate it. So when Mr. Foster and Mr. Winograd and Mr. Iverson mentioned other students that didn't make it, I don't know if that included, I have Megan Driver, Mike Malinowski, are those, you're here, okay, so Megan Driver, Mike Malinowski, Amanda Lopez, and then I also have Darla Hicks and Sun, and Sam Owen. I have you kind of as a block, but if you want to come up three at a time and then other two on deck. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Megan Driver, and I'm a student at Oregon State University and chair for the Oregon Student Association Board of Directors. I want to thank you today for giving me the opportunity to speak before you all. I'm here on behalf of the OSA in support of the Oregon University System. You've heard a lot of testimony this session from students about the cuts and the cost increases and what they've meant for them. We believe the governor's budget provided access, affordability, and quality for students. Through state funding for the Aspire program, the budget funded a program that helps high school students, gives them the information they need and helps them with the application process for financial aid and college. The expansion of the Aspire program would provide students access to college even if their parents didn't have a college degree and didn't necessarily know all the ins and outs of how to apply. Today's students are less likely to earn a degree than their parents just two decades before them. The Aspire program will make sure high school students have the resources they need to reverse this horrible trend. The governor's budget also provided affordability through the creation and funding of the shared responsibility model. While the legislature has expanded the Oregon Opportunity Grant in the last couple of sessions, it has barely kept pace with the cuts that we have been forced to make. The program only serves families who make 55% of the median family income, and last session was the first time in 6 years that we were able to fund all eligible students. In addition to the shared responsibility model, the governor's budget also funded the Student Child Care Program, a program that goes to provide access to student parents and ensure that they can afford both child care and college. I'm going to go ahead and cut to the chase here. The governor, the co-chair's budget basically did not provide access, affordability, or quality. In the end, we need to fix us first. A fix is not transferring the pain from one set of students to another set of students, but by making sure that if there is more money, whether through new revenue, increased funds through revenue forecasts, increased end fund balance, whatever it is, just make sure that we as students are the first priority. We're working to get back to the formula that will provide access, affordability, and quality. So please, we ask you, work with us just to fix the problem that we have before us. And we'll continue to talk with you over the next month and present stories to you about why it is so important and crucial to our state to reinvest in post-secondary education. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for pointing out some revenue sources, Ms. Driver.
The Disability Advocacy Cultural Association at Portland State University appreciates the opportunity to come and testify before you today. My name is Michael Malinowski, and I am the coordinator of the group. I represent roughly 15% or 3,700 university students. We are an overlapping population. We, all genders, all ethnic groups, all socioeconomic backgrounds, we DACA can claim as members of our population. We are also the first population exposed to the negative effects of any policy change. We are the canary in the mineshaft. For a college student with disabilities, the personal cost of their education is higher than any other groups. Disabled students are, as a general, take a year longer to graduate than the average student, and because of inadequate accommodations are forced to retake courses at a higher rate. As the pool of education of funding dwindles, more and more students compete for less and less funding, which means disabled students fall further and further behind. The Americans with Disabilities Act does not fund our education. It only requires legal accommodations. Like everyone else, we rely heavily on grants, scholarships, and low-interest loans to make it through school. This puts us heavily in debt, creating an environment ripe for financial hardship while we search for employment. My population or for my population, the time it takes to find a job is twice that of the U.S. population as a whole. As the cost of higher education climbs, the necessity for financial assistance for education has risen. Granted, every group faces the same challenge, but the disabled population as a whole is being priced out of the market. 87% of new jobs in Oregon will require a bachelor's degree by 2010. This means that education is not a luxury. We know that you are caring and care about drawing from the local community, but therefore subsidizing education is a cost of doing business in Oregon. Receiving a college education is not a right. However, in order for Oregon to survive in these economic times, an educated population is essential. I ask you to consider the missed economic opportunities that occur when a population does not have sufficient access to higher education. Crime rates increase, businesses fold, major corporations look elsewhere for an educated employment base, and an educated population is more likely to be education promotes participation in our democracy. It means that cutting-edge science and technology companies are more likely to be drawn to the area. Educated citizens are more likely to be more independent and not require social services. You have the power to think and act for the future of our state. What we're really talking about is how can we support education so that all of our citizens of Oregon can have are competitive in the job market. Fix us first.
Thank you very much, Mr. Melendez.
Is it Ms. Lopez?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me here. Dear Chair Galizia and members of the committee, my name is Amanda Lopez, and I'm a fourth-year student at the University of Oregon. I'm here to talk about funding for higher education. I believe access to education is a right, and it's not a privilege. However, the actions that legislators in the past few decades have been taking have made it so it seems so. I don't know if you guys already know this, but the average Oregon student graduates with over $18,000 worth of debt, which is about a down payment on a house. And no student should be expected to survive in the job market that's out there with that much debt right now. Me personally, I feel like we're doing everything right. High school students are taking AP classes, we're getting credit, we're doing everything that we can to graduate earlier so that we don't have to pay for those extra years in college. We're doing everything we can on our side, on our part, we're getting good grades as well. However, when we get into college, we're over our heads in loans, fees, and our tuition keeps rising, so it's harder for us to stay in school. The retention part of being in college is probably a lot higher than it was in the past. Specifically for me, my parents don't have the means to support me, so I work two jobs, which can be crazy, because not only does one of my jobs not work around my schedule, because I don't have work study, so I'm not eligible for campus jobs, so I have to leave campus and get a job that doesn't really know about midterms or when finals are. Another thing is I plan on graduating in 4 years. I'm not, because my scholarship only covers 12 credits. So anything after that, and expected graduation rate in 4 years is 16 per term. I can't do that, so I'm staying an extra year, taking out another loan, and with not a fixed rate. So I will be paying probably more than I should have because I can't afford it. This also goes with funding classrooms and classes. Just one of my classes this year, if you were late, we didn't have enough seats, one of the students had to sit in the hallway. And the fact that I'm paying this many thousands of dollars and I may have to risk sitting in the hallway is just unacceptable. I just want you guys to help us achieve more, help students do more, get more out of our public education, and fix us first. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lopez. Yeah,
Mr. Chair. Lopez, you're a student at the University of Oregon, and you've been denied a seat in a class that you paid money for.
No, not denied.
Well, yes, you have, because there's no seat to sit in, correct?
That's true.
Sitting in the hallway is not acceptable.
You're talking about a peer, right?
Peer?
One of your peers.
Well, whoever just showed students. Up late kind of just had to sit in the hallway.
Is this a common occurrence in that class?
It was a Spanish class. It was an upper level, so
okay.
Yeah, it was every day.
Thank you. I'd ask for credit on my tuition, and I'll talk to the University of Oregon about that matter.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Qué bueno.
Thank you, Senator. So I just want, before I call up the next, Darla Hicks and is it Son Owen? I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing. I just want to announce to the committee.
It's like a class.
I just want to announce to the committee members that Monday we're not scheduled to meet, but would appreciate it. Well, actually, I need you to keep the time from 3:00 until 5:00 would be ideal, free, and then we're going to try to set up a half-hour meeting with each of you on Monday. So, in other words,
kind of crucial at this.
Yeah. So.
Do you know where the votes are?
No. Sometime between 3 and 5, I'm going to take a half hour of your time is the idea, and we'll try to work it out. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, and we could probably try to let their offices know that tomorrow, so they'll know they can free up the time after tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
That would be great.
Hicks?
Yes. My name is Darla Hicks. I go to Lane Community College. I'm going to be a transfer student. And just to address Senator Walker real quick, I've had many a class where students are sitting on the at the U of O, and I go to both, where they're sitting on the cement floors to stay in the class and hear the lecture. So just for your information.
Could you please, Mr. Chair, after we've got another committee, I've been in committee all day, but could you please send a letter to my office?
I will. I'm here. I intern with Senator Pozanski, so I can come over next week.
I will
give you that information.
I appreciate it. You
definitely. So I'm a transfer student. My debt currently is $15,000. That's at the community colleges. I'm a single mom. I have a 3-year-old. And you guys have testimony from me telling you about my personal life from the community colleges and the child care program. I'm going to transfer. I'm excited. It's going to be the summer, except for the amount of my debt. I'm going to take out private loans for school just to fund my 2 summer classes I am taking to be where I need to be after 2 years. And those are not fixed rates. Those are up around 14% because I've taken them out before in order to fund everything. The child care program is an integral part. I mean, I'm over 1,000 down on the list, and I've been on there for 2 years. But those families that are funded, I mean, if I had that funding and then it was taken away, it'd be a dropout situation because I pay $800 a month almost in daycare. And it's a huge, huge thing to have to pay that much in daycare. So those families that are being helped, that would be an amazing thing for me to even have accomplished for myself. And it'd take a lot of pressure off. I wouldn't have to work the 2 jobs that I already worked, along with interning up here and along with the 18 credits I take in order to get through in 4 years. And so I urge you guys to fix us first also and put that revenue in there.
Thank you, Ms. Hicks.
Senator Devin.
Mr. Chairman, I realize we have little time left. We still need to get to more people. But in terms of taking out these additional loans at this much higher rate than private, is that the clear advice, or have you been given advice from the financial aid offices where you're at to do that?
No, I've done it purely because of my child care costs.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't have to work over 40 hours a week.
Okay. But you talk to them, and that's the only alternative that you have?
Yeah, as far as I am getting scholarships now, and this was previously before scholarships, and for the summer, there's no options for me, except so I don't take out of this pot here that's waiting for the next 3 terms. I have to take out those privatized loans. There's no other options at that point.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Sunowen?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah. Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to share my testimony. This is my first time, so I'm kind of nervous. But my name is Sun. I am a sophomore at the University of Oregon, and I'm here in support of the funding for higher education and talking about the issues and the problems that I, along with many other students in Oregon, face about affordability. I come from a low-income, single-parent household. I have 2 other sisters in college right now. And my parents have to help all 3 of us through college, which is nearly impossible. My financial aid doesn't cover nearly half of the cost of my attendance. I work part-time, along with work-study, I have a few need-based grants, and what that doesn't cover, I take out loans. So by the time I graduate the University of Oregon, I will be over $17,000 in debt. Along with this, I am very heavily involved in student government and student involvement on campus. I dedicate over 20 hours a week, along with working part-time. Along with what Amanda Lopez was talking about, is that this winter term I had to sit through a class where every day the roof leaked for weeks on end, and for the amount I pay and the amount I work for my education, I expect more than to sit through a leaky ceiling classroom, and in that way it's detrimental to my education. And I'm just talking just in hopes that, you know, the funding for education, the funding for higher education will increase, and for your support in that. And thank you for your time as well.
Thank you. Excellent. Both of you, appreciate it. Okay, last panel. Dean Braugh, Kathy Swift, and Jackson.
Sally.
Thank you. You saved me.
My name is Dean Braugh, and I'm a social professor at Western Oregon University. And being late on the agenda here, a lot of people have touched on the issues that I was going to bring to your attention, so I'll be quick. Okay, a disgusting situation, as I call the brain drain. You've heard about it before. Retaining and recruiting good faculty is very, very difficult. I'm from a division of social sciences where there are multiple disciplines, and from last academic year to this academic year, we lost four of our promising young faculty because they were offered better jobs, lower workload, outside of Oregon, and this is disgusting. I know you know about this. You've got to help us stop this hemorrhage. The second thing that we have a lot of non-traditional students that work, I would say, lower middle class and working class families at Western Oregon University, and their debt load is disgusting. You've heard it here before, so I won't dwell on that. Please help them. We've got people working, students working 30, 40 hours a week, trying to carry even full loads sometimes, and I see the stress on them. We all see the stress on them. Something has to be done to help these students out with more scholarship money, more work-study money. There's multiple ways we can help these students, and we're worried about accessibility. You know about that. Capital budget, my institution. I have dear friends at Oregon State University, too. My wife's an adjunct in Oregon State. They really need classrooms. We need classrooms. We need bigger classrooms. They need to be wired so that they're smart rooms. A chronic shortage of classrooms. U of O people were already alluding to that. Office space, that's a personal problem we have. We have people time-sharing offices. We have faculty, not just adjuncts either, sharing offices. It's disgusting. Shouldn't happen. They're small offices. They're inadequate offices. Plus, we have to share them. We need classroom and office space desperately. Deferred maintenance. We've got serious deferred maintenance problems. I won't list some of those that I care about, that I know about. Here, I hear a similar story at OSU. I'm sure U of O has these problems too. You've got to help us. Roofs leaking, air conditioning, heating systems that don't work properly, and so on and so forth. And so anyway, I know you know most of these things. Please at least get us back to the governor's budget and help us out. Thank you all for hearing us today.
Thank you very much.
Chair Lizio, members of the committee, my name is Jackson Stalley. I'm a library technician at Western Oregon University, and I'm here representing SEIU Local 503 and its 41,000 members statewide. We are very concerned because of the co-chair's budget has failed to adequately fund the higher education system. While corporations in Oregon continue to pay a pittance each year, our post-secondary education system is on the brink of collapse. With a $35 million cut to the governor's recommended budget, the already diminishing quality of life on Oregon campuses continues to decline. Today, I would like to specifically focus on the cuts the co-chairs made to support staff at Oregon universities. Support staff are classified employees, and over the year, more and more classified employees have lost jobs within the Oregon university system or have moved on to higher paying positions elsewhere. For example, Library and Media Services at Western Oregon University is a fine illustration of this. Video Production Services, which provides a valuable service to faculty, staff, and students, has lost 1.5 of its 2.5 full-time employees since 2004.
My position at Hammersley Library as a serials and electronic resource assistant has seen tremendous turnover with four techs in the last 5 years at Western Oregon University. Also during that time, the position went vacant for almost a year. At the same time, our electronic resource demands are significantly increasing at the university level. I believe one of the chief reasons for this turnover in otherwise qualified and effective employees is the low level of compensation and increasing workloads. I am currently attempting to manage a full-time workload with a half-time work hour status. The technology skills required to manage a university's library and a university library's serial and electronic resources are significant, and these skills are compensated at much higher rates in other fields. After receiving excellent training and experience in the libraries, unfortunately, many eventually take positions with higher pay and lower workloads elsewhere. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Sally and Mr. Braun. Appreciate it. Kathy Swift? Not here? Okay. All right, well, thank you all very much for the testimony. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 5515, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
Joint Ways and Means Committee. It is Friday, April 27th at 8:30 a.m. in Hearing Room F. Joint Ways and Means Committee, the full committee. It is Friday, April 27th, 2007, 8:30 a.m. in Hearing Room F.